Okay, sorry about that. We gaveled in at 10:02 a.m., September 11th, 2024. This is the North Dakota Public Service Commission. I'm Randy Christman, joined by Commissioner Sherry Haugenhofer and Commissioner Julie Fedorchak, so we have a quorum. And before we start anything, would you join me in pledging our allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you for that. And other than just the fact that it's September 11th I don't know what we would do to, there's nothing you can do to really pay proper respect to the all the people who lost their lives, both in the terrorist attacks 23 years ago, as well as the ones who then sacrificed so much over the course of the next couple decades. But I don't have anything else to say beyond that. And Commissioner Haugenhofer, did you have any opening comments?
No, I was just going to mention 9/11 too. You know, just saying the pledge this morning just has a deeper meaning. And last night I had a privilege of talking to some young people. And just to elaborate, I want to read a statement that was in my speech at the end regarding 9/11. On this solemn day, we pause to remember and honor the lives lost on September 11th, 2001. We reflect on the bravery and sacrifice of the first responders, the resilience of the survivors, and the enduring spirit of unity that emerged from this tragedy. Let us continue to support one another, cherish our freedoms, and strive for a future of peace, understanding, and extending grace. We will never forget.
Well said. Commissioner Fedorchak?
Thanks, Randy and Sherry, for those great words. I, on the way over here, drove by the Starian Complex in Mandan, and that's where they're holding the annual firemen walking up the flights. They've usually done that here, which has been a wonderful tradition, and I always loved going out into the stairwell and watching the firemen and women hauling up all their equipment up and down those steps the exact number of times at the full height of the Twin Towers would have been. And they were just, you know, sweating, and it didn't always smell that good in there. But it was a really, really powerful. And, you know, they'd often stop at our, because we have water fountain, they'd often stop out in our landing area and rest a little bit. And it was just really powerful to see how hard it was to walk up those steps just under normal conditions. And then to imagine what those firefighters went through at the time when half that building was already in flames or crumbling. So, I mean, it's easy to give lip service to the bravery of these folks, but gosh, I mean, it's really kind of hard to comprehend just how brave those acts were when everyone, we all remember that footage, the towers collapsing, people running through the streets of New York and all that dust and soot and debris coming after them like an ocean. And the firefighters and the first responders were running the other direction right into it. It's just unbelievable. So it does, and it changed our country forever. I think we can all agree some things have never been the same. So it's a good reminder to all of us how quickly things can turn, to appreciate what you've got when you've got it right now. And also to remain ever convicted to, I think, one of the fundamental principles we need to follow in this country, which is peace through strength. We've got to have strong leadership to have peace in this world. And so double down on that. Thank you, Randy.
Well said. With that, we will move into our work for the day. We have five items on the consent calendar, so I move approval of those five items plus the previous minutes.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Moving into the regular agenda on my portfolio items, I would like to change the order of these and take them in this order, number 1, 2, 5, 4, 3, if there's not objection. I think you will like why I saved number 3 for last. So without objection, we will go in that order.
No objection from me.
Okay. Starting with number 1, I move the commission close case number AM-23-358 for the 2024 exploratory drilling abandoned mine lands project and Public Service Commission 2024 exploratory drilling AML project case number AM-23-358.
Second.
So on May 13th of this year, the commission entered into a contract with Earth Energy and Water Systems of New Salem for drilling and casing of abandoned underground mines near New Salem and Scranton. The original contract amount was $258,000. We had two change orders along the way, so the final cost ended up being $281,313. Our final payment was approved July 18th, and the contractor has notified us or certified that the employees, subcontractors, and suppliers used for fulfilling the terms of the contract have been paid. The work was completed satisfactorily. Brett Job served as our project manager, and Scott Besmer was the project inspector. And our AML division recommends that the commission close the 2024 exploratory drilling AML project, as do I.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay, then the one that drew in the crowd. I move the commission approve bond release 2 for surface coal mining permit GRGR-0501 held by Leonardite Products LLC for the Stony Creek Mine to release all reclamation liabilities on 28.9 acres of industrial land located in the west half of Section 8, Township 154 North, Range 100 West in Williams County. The bond release amount is $142,945, and it will become effective October 11, 2024, unless a formal hearing is requested. In Leonardite Products, LLC, bond release to permit GRGR-0501 application, case number RC-24-092.
Second.
So this bond release consists, as I said, of there's two tracts of land, and as I said, it's 28.9 acres in total in Williams County. It's east of Williston there. The tracts consist of undisturbed land, mined and partially backfilled Leonardite pits, and topsoil and subsoil stockpiles. The entire permit area has industrial and commercial post-mine land use, and it is owned by Ellis Olson, LLC. The Department of Environmental Quality issued permit 0384 to develop these mine pits in this bond release tract as an inert waste landfill. So the Division of Waste Management will assume regulatory authority of the bond release tract on the effective date of the bond release approval, which again was October 11th if no one requests a hearing. Although reclaimed lands are subject to the 10-year revegetation responsibility period, our policy memo number 15 allows for an exception from the 10-year revegetation responsibility if certain conditions are met. And that would include the issuance of proper permits and the implementation of industrial land use. So the appropriate permits have been issued. The industrial post-mine land use has been approved. The Williams County Commission approved changing the permit area zoning from agriculture to industrial commercial residential at the surface owner's request on July 3rd. of 2012 already. That's old news. The newspaper notice for bond release was published in the Williston Herald for 4 weeks in June. The applicant submitted copies of the notification letters sent to individuals, agencies, and government entities. No objection to the bond release application were received. Our field inspection was held June 26. Included in that inspection were two representatives from Leonardite Products, two representatives for Eco Park Landfill, and three representatives from North Dakota's Department of Environmental Quality. So the liability for the collateral bond for the whole mine is just over $427,000, and that's supported by an irrevocable standby letter of credit. So Leonardite Products is requesting a reduction in that $427,000, a reduction of $142,945. And so an adequate amount of bond will remain following bond release approval to cover the reclamation liability for their remaining permit acreage. The bond release will become effective October 11th unless a formal hearing is requested. The Reclamation Division has completed its review of the application and recommends its approval, as do I.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Now we'll jump from item 2 to number 5. I move the Commission adopt the order certifying use of federal universal service support in Public Service Commission USF Use Certification 47 CFR 54.314 2025 compliance case number PU-24-15.
Second.
So Section 254E of the Telecommunications Act of 1996 requires that telecom carriers use universal service support, I quote this next part, only for provision, maintenance, and upgrading of facilities and services for which support is intended, unquote. States that desire eligible carriers to receive support pursuant to the high-cost program must file an annual certification with the administrator and with the FCC stating that all federal high-cost support provided to such carriers within that state was used in the preceding calendar year and will be used in the coming calendar year only for the provision, maintenance, and upgrading of facilities and services for which the support is intended. So in 2002, wondering how exactly we're going to certify that, this commission back then 22 years ago issued an order that any telecommunications carrier that desires to have certification to the FCC shall file an affidavit certifying that the federal support they receive is used only for the provision, maintenance, and upgrading of facilities and services for which the support is intended. The PSC further ordered that affidavits filed will be the basis for the PSC's certification to the FCC. Affidavits regarding use of federal universal support were filed with us by 41 different companies. Unless there's demand, I won't read them all off. This order clarifies that our certification is based upon the affidavits filed by the carriers, and we will send a copy of each of the filed affidavits to the FCC and the Universal Service Administrative Company. See no hands raised, I will refrain from reading the 41 companies.
I thought you could do it in alphabetical order.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Then RC4. Believing that there will be no prejudice to the rights of the parties or the public interest and finding the cases involve similar questions of law and fact, I move the Commission consolidate these cases for hearing under North Dakota Administrative Code Section 6902.04.04 and issue a notice of opportunity for consolidated hearing in Nemont Telephone, Missouri Valley, Northwest Communications, Multiple Exchanges, Public Convenience and Necessity, case number PU-24322, and Nemont Telephone, Missouri Valley Northwest Communications Designated Eligible Carrier application, case number PU-24323.
Second.
So, and actually the next case is going to be very similar to this with different companies and different communities involved. But on August 26th, Nemont Telephone Cooperative, Missouri Valley Communications, and Northwest Communications Cooperative, so they all operate kind of up there in that oil patch area of North Dakota, filed a joint application requesting authorization to provide local exchange telecommunications services in the Ambrose Exchange, Fortuna Exchange, and East Westby Exchange, and the Williston Exchange in North Dakota. The Ambrose, Fortuna, and East Westby Exchanges are currently served by Nemont. The Williston Exchange is currently served by Missouri Valley. The issues to be considered in this case are the fitness and ability of Northwest to provide the services, the adequacy of Northwest's proposal to provide for these proposed services, the technical, financial, and managerial ability of Northwest, and whether upon granting a certificate of public convenience and necessity to Northwest, if Nemont and Missouri Valley's certificates of public and convenience and necessity should be relinquished. These same companies also requested that Northwest be designated as an eligible telecommunications carrier in those same exchanges. The issues to be considered in that case are the qualification of the applicant, the ETC Universal Service Support Area to be designated, whether it's in the public interest to designate Northwest as an ETC in those areas, and whether upon designation of Northwest as an ETC, Nemont's designation and Missouri Valley's designation as ETCs should be relinquished. So in essence, Northwest is going to take over these and from Nemont and Missouri Valley. Northwest, by the way, Nemont is like a combination kind of Northeast North Dakota, Montana. That company will continue to operate at a very large and impressive scale in Montana. I think they're relinquishing this primarily because they have their hands full with fiber build out there, and probably recognize that Northwest can serve these handful of exchanges better. So those interested are invited to comment on the application in writing. Persons desiring a hearing must file a written request identifying their interest in the proceeding and reasons for requesting a hearing. Comments and requests for hearings must be received by October 25th, 2024. If deemed appropriate, the Commission can determine the matter without a formal hearing.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Randy, do you anticipate, if there aren't any hearings requested, having an informal or just making a recommendation as portfolio holder?
I probably would just move forward with doing an order, but if there, anyone would like an informal for more information, you know, I kind of supposed some things there from my familiarity. By the way, I also believe the Northwest part of it that serves Williston, I believe that is owned by Nemont. And so
sure.
I think this is a friendly thing of recognizing who can best serve these communities. Mm-hmm. So I would probably just move forward without if there's no comments or requests, but if someone else wants informal, we could sure have
okay. One. I'm comfortable with your recommendations as portfolio holder. Assuming nobody comes forward with a request for a hearing.
Yeah.
Is there any further discussion?
I do just want to comment on a couple of these communities. Fortuna, North Dakota. You may not, I'm sure everybody else is aware of this, of the entire contiguous 48 states. When you get to the summer equinox, when days are the longest, Fortuna, North Dakota has the latest sunset of anywhere in the United States because they're so ridiculously far east in the central time zone and way north. So Maybe tale about Fortuna.
Is that their good Fortuna?
And by the way, East Westby, that is the home of the East Westby North Stars, champions of the Southern League. So just thought you should know that.
Southern guys, League of what?
Guys like me don't get to work in old Cheech and Chong jokes very often. Oh. They had a line about the East Westchester North Stars, champions of the Southern League, one time, and I thought East Westby would work good. So, thank you for the opportunity.
Can't wait to hear the next one.
Quite the discussion we're having. Chi-chi-chung.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Lastly, believing that there will be no prejudice to the rights of the parties of the public interest and finding the cases involve similar questions of law and fact, I move the Commission consolidate these cases for hearing under North Dakota Administrative Code 6902.0404 and issue a notice of opportunity for consolidated hearing in Reservation Telephone, Mid-State Telephone, Mid-State Communications, Stanley, Medora, and Beach Exchanges, Public Convenience and Necessity, Case Number PU-24-319, and Reservation Telephone, Mid-State Telephone, Mid-State Communications, Designated Eligible Carrier Application, Case Number PU-24-320.
Second.
So very similar. Again, the names have been changed not to protect the innocent, but because they're different companies. On August 22nd, Reservation Telephone Cooperative, Mid-State Telephone Company, and Mid-State Communications filed a joint application requesting authorization to provide local exchange telecommunications services in the Stanley Exchange, Medora Exchange, and Beach Exchange. The Stanley and Medora Exchange are currently served by Mid-State Telephone. The Beach Exchange is currently served by Mid-State Communications. The issues to be considered are the fitness and ability of Reservation to provide services, adequacy of Reservation's proposed telecommunications services, technical, financial, and managerial ability of Reservation Telephone, and whether upon granting a certificate of public convenience and necessity to Reservation, if Mid-State Telephones and Mid-State Communications' certificates of public convenience and necessity should be relinquished. They also requested that Reservation be designated as an essential telecommunications carrier in the Stanley, Medora, and Beach Exchange areas. The issues to be considered in that case are the qualifications of the applicant, the ETC universal support area to be designated, whether it is in the public interest to designate Reservation as an ETC, and whether upon designation of Reservation as an ETC, Mid-State Telephone's designation and Mid-State Communications' designation as ETCs should be relinquished. Those interested are invited to comment on the application in writing. Persons desiring a hearing must file a written request identifying their interest in the proceedings and the reasons for requesting a hearing. Comments and requests for hearings must be received by October 25th, 2024. If deemed appropriate, the Commission can determine the matter without a formal hearing.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor.
Oh, oh. Sorry. You didn't delay quite
trivia.
Long enough. So, of course, everyone knows Stanley is kind of famous for the Whirl of Whips. Mm-hmm. If you haven't had one and you're passing through there, you gotta try it. I want to point out Beach, and this is just a personal thing. The home on the range that provides youth services to like traumatized youth is, in my opinion, such a wonderful organization. And it's near Beach. It's at Sentinel Butte, but the kids go to public school at Beach. And these are kids that have been through horrible things that I can't even imagine. And some of them are only there for a short time. The Beach community works them into the school system so that their education can progress and such. And maybe I'm so passionate about this because of my background in animal agriculture, but I understand the value of learning about caring for animals and that type of thing, as well as the kind of therapeutic aspects of being around animals when you're feeling down a little bit. And I just wanted to point out that Home on the Range, if someone's ever looking for a charity, it's a great organization in my opinion. But here's why I wanted to hold this off. And I didn't want to do this out and then go to joking around about East-West be North Stars. Mm-hmm. Especially with today being 9/11. Ann Nicole Nelson was the North Dakotan who grew up in Stanley, one of the communities we're dealing with here. She was the North Dakotan who died in the Twin Towers that day. And it's still on the internet. If you look her up, her mother says at the end that she would not want us to grieve, but only remember. I wanted to point that out since we had Stanley on our agenda today.
Is there any further discussion?
I remember hearing her story and being impressed by what an amazing young woman she was. And yeah, quite a light that was snuffed out that day unnecessarily. And I'm sure it's never been the same for her parents. So thanks for bringing her up as a special remembrance, Randy.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
That concludes my portfolio. Commissioner Haugenhofer, your item was withdrawn, correct?
That's correct. My item was withdrawn.
Okay. Commissioner Fedorchak?
All right. Thank you. I'm going to get out my stuff here. I move the commission adopt the findings of facts, conclusions of law, and order in Badger Wind LLC, amend Badger Wind Project, Logan and McIntosh, citing application case number PU-24-87.
Second.
So this was a case that we originally looked at 4 years ago and approved an order for Badger Wind in November of 2022. On February of this year, 2024, Badger Wind filed an application to amend their certificate of site compatibility. So we brought that in. The Laborers District Council of Minnesota and North Dakota filed a petition to intervene. We granted that petition, and on July 11th, we had a formal hearing on this case in Wishick. So I'll just kind of highlight some of the changes that this project is that triggered this kind of review again. So Badger Wind proposes to update the project by expanding the project boundary to include about 35,000 acres of land in Logan and McIntosh counties, to utilize a different potential turbine model, a 2.82 megawatt turbine model, and to increase the number of potential turbine locations to 102, of which 93 will be constructed. Also still kind of depending on the turbine model that they choose. The original project included construction up to 79. So they increased by 14 the number of potential turbines. And the project's nameplate capacity will increase to 262 megawatts. However, they have an interconnection agreement for 250 megawatts, so they won't be able to output more power than that. They have not yet selected a turbine model for the project, but everything in this application and in this order that we're proposing assumes the largest turbine model. So that was what was used to determine impact. So anything smaller than that will automatically fit within the thresholds of all the setbacks, et cetera. The construction, is anticipated to begin as early as the third quarter of 2024 and completed by the end of 2025, with commercial operation expected by the end of 2025. The project will interconnect at the MDU Wishick Junction 230 kV substation in McIntosh County, and they need an approximate 0.25 mile transmission line between the project substation and and the Wishick Junction substation. The estimated total cost of the project is $472 million. I'll go through some more of the changes. Since the 2022 order and certificate were issued, Badger Wind conducted additional environmental studies and surveys for the project, and its impacts are anticipated to be minimal. I'll go through a number of those here in a minute, but they coordinated with all the federal, state, and local agencies, approximately 30 agencies, in reviewing this as well. And they have obtained a conditional use permit from Logan County. McIntosh County does not have zoning regulations requiring that. Let's see. So in terms of their impacts, they aren't locating any turbines within the setback areas, the designated exclusion areas. They are addressing a lot of the avoidance areas as well. There are cultural resources present in the project area, but they've been cited to avoid the cultural resources. An unanticipated discovery plan has been developed and reviewed by SHPO, and all the coordination with SHPO has been completed. The project has been designed to avoid and minimize temporary impacts to the wetlands, and they have requested, and this order would approve, an expanded tree or shrub removal area from 50 feet, wider than 50 feet, in up to 10 locations. In terms of their coordination with U.S. Fish and Wildlife and North Dakota Game and Fish, they have gone through kind of extensive coordination with them. No turbines will be located in unbroken grasslands. The majority of turbines are sited in areas that are not suitable for sharp-tailed grouse, and all turbines located in identified suitable habitat are sited in previously fragmented areas, which helps minimize the impacts to local sharp-tailed grouse population. A lot of this is summarized in a letter on June 10th that we received from Game and Fish, in which they stated, "We are encouraged to see the proposed changes have minimal impacts to wildlife, and that Orsted, that's the owner, is making a commitment to offsetting any residual impacts of the project as a whole that it will have on sensitive species and the habitats they depend on, and that this commitment has been included in the bird and bat conservation strategy." The department further recommends that the bird and bat conservation strategy further clarify its commitment to establish habitat as an offset rather than pursue land acquisitions or easements. We also received a note from the Department of Agriculture kind of outlining some of the offsets. Again, our orders can't be contingent on these happening, but this is really the first case we've approved since the change in the law that we worked out in the last session that codified sort of this new approach between the Game and Fish and putting the North Dakota Department of Agriculture sort of in the middle of it. And I feel pretty good. I was not real excited about this during the legislative session, but I feel pretty good about how it's evolved. I do think that there's some real benefits to the landowners having the Department of Ag involved in it. There's more transparency because we're seeing that. We're seeing the negotiation back and forth. We're seeing what the plan is, and we'll have ongoing communication and awareness from the from the Department of Ag, as will Game and Fish. So I think it is a step in the right direction, and I'm optimistic that this is going to provide a good path forward for addressing sort of these long-term issues of minimizing the impact to the habitat, to the wildlife, and the landowners, and working with the landowners in a constructive and productive way. So I'm pleased about that. Let's see. A few other issues. The shadow flicker is, they are going to be within the and below the 30 hours per year shadow flicker at all the residents unless they have a waiver. And the same is true of the sound impacts. They have received waivers from those that are above the threshold, and have committed to maintaining the threshold, staying below the threshold in all of those occupied residences. So that's been taken care of as well. So with that, I think we've gone through this again. We had a lot of good back and forth with the city, the community. There was quite a few discussions on with FAA approval and impacts to the flight plan of Air Medvac. They've filed all the coordination with the hospital there, showing that the air ambulances can get in and out through this area. There seems to be good coordination there. So that was one of the big issues that came up during the hearing that was addressed in late filed exhibits. So I think that we've covered all the key criteria on this amendment, and I think the order is ready to go, and I'm prepared to support it.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Yes, I will say a couple things. First of all, one, I think big positive from the first case. I appreciate that they got things squared up with the hospital and got that kind of clarified. Okay, and this is not why I'm voting against this, but I do just want to point this out as an observation. I don't know. I'm not sure where we were with the last one that we approved, but I didn't notice that it was growing this much. It seemed like through the hearing process over the years, we were getting some of these companies to kind of restrain their footprint a little bit. And when you look at, you know, the number of turbines or megawatt hours, it just seems like the footprint is blowing up on some of these. These guys do not even average one turbine per half a section of land. I mean, we used to site wind farms, as I recall, like 15,000 acres, less than half this size, that were probably not much smaller wind farms than this. I mean, I don't know where we stop with that. Can a wind farm come in and just take the whole state for a couple hundred, take every best spot and spread the... I don't know, but I worry for future cases. How can we kind of restrain this a little bit, that they're not taking all the opportunity for anything else to ever develop there because it's all in their footprint? But my real reason for objection has to do with the congestion on the grid, the impacts that are going to come down, the fact that yes, the regional transmission organization imposes some costs, but we're already seeing it with the transmission project that's in another case. It's not all the costs. Some of our congestion over there has possibly or will possibly be alleviated by the data center, but do we want to just jump right back into the same problem again and cause the need for all that transmission? I think until these companies start paying for the transmission costs, and I can't approve at least a facility like this that is going right into an area of heavy and known congestion. I'm not going to go on and on about it. I feel the dissenting opinion in the previous case speaks for me. I feel that the consenting opinion that countered that also makes very good argument the other way. And anybody can read that, and I don't think much has really changed from there. It's not an easy call, whether because it is maybe an expansion of how we view adverse impacts to citizens, but the arguments are there. Some of us can fall one way on them and some the other, but I think the arguments previously filed speak for themselves.
Is there any further discussion?
I'm going to support this project. I think I discussed some of it, the reasons why I'm supporting it in the past case, so I won't reiterate that. Some of the concerns that were brought up regarding the communication with the emergency were well addressed, and I thank them for that. To your point, Chair Crisman about the land and taking up of the land. Good point, interesting point. And as I reflect on the hearing, not one landowner or anyone brought it up on that, but it's a good point. I mean, there was discussion, landowners who support it, and there was discussion on landowners who did not support it. But the vast acreage that is taking up, that never came up. So a good point that you brought up, but to counter that, there was no objection to that. So something to keep our eye on. I understand that.
Is there any further discussion?
In terms of the interconnection, I agree. It's a balance of, you know, developing and expanding our energy resources for, you know, a growing demand everywhere, and also making sure that we have the system upgrades in place to accommodate that, and that's an ongoing process. I will just say, I think there was some good that came of our discussion of this in terms of transparency. They did file with us sort of a detailed list of the upgrades that they did have to provide for their interconnection agreement, and it was $28 million. So I was pleased to see that, and saw some kind of substantial investments being made on their behalf to facilitate their interconnection. But it's a point well taken, and you know, electric transmission investments are something that North Dakota is going to need more of in order to continue exporting our very valuable resources to customers beyond our borders who really want it. And so we're going to have to carefully watch everyone in this. These seats is going to have to carefully watch that and make sure that our customers are paying their fair share, but also not subsidizing the plans of others. That's not always an easy to distinguish where that line is.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, I'll move to a roll call vote. Chair Crisman?
Nay.
Commissioner Haugenhofer?
Aye.
Commissioner Fedorchak?
Aye.
Motion is approved.
Oh, sorry. I'm still up. All right. Let me get my next one here. I was thinking about investments in transmission infrastructure. All right. I move the commission adopt the order in Northern States Power Company accounting for a gas pipeline interim rate refund approval, case number PU-24-187.
Aye. Or second.
Oh, that's okay. This one is a lot easier and happier than the last one.
I was just trying to move things along.
On May 8th, Northern States Power filed a request for a waiver of its cost of gas tariff in order to apply the North Dakota jurisdictional allocation, so North Dakota's share of a refund from Northern Natural Gas Company, to partially offset the deferred costs of remediating the Fargo manufactured gas plant site. The refund is a result of an interim rate refund relative to pipeline transportation rates paid by NSP. So I'm just going to simplify that because that's a mouthful. Basically, NSP pays for its transportation costs for its gas through various pipelines that it receives its gas to serve its customers on its gas system. And one of those companies that it buys gas from is Northern Natural Gas Company. It's kind of confusing because it might sound like Northern, like NSP, but it's a separate company, Northern Natural Gas Company. They're a FERC-regulated company. They have tariffs that are overseen by FERC, and FERC required them to issue a refund to NSP for some of the gas that it purchased from them. I'm not sure why, but anyway, they got a refund. It was $4.3 million. So in this case, we're saying that North Dakota's share of that refund, which is $550,000, North Dakota's jurisdictional share of that refund, is going to be applied to offset the costs of the manufactured gas plant remediation. So that'll help pay down the balance on that account. And that's a separate project that North Dakota NSP gas customers are paying for the remediation of an old manufactured gas facility in Fargo that had some environmental problems and needed to be cleaned up. So there's a kind of balance on that account that we have to pay off. This $550,000 will go to bringing that balance down, and instead of being refunded directly to customers. So ultimately, it'll reduce customers' costs for paying for that manufactured gas plant remediation. So that's what this order does.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Now that's it for me.
Okay. A few announcements. This afternoon we have an informal hearing with Global Connection Incorporated of America. It's case number PU-24-288. That's an eligible telecommunications carrier case. Again, another one. Our next regular scheduled meeting was September 25th. I want to highlight that that is canceled. But we'll have a special commission meeting to replace it 2 days later, Friday, September 27th at 10 o'clock, the normal time.
Chair Christman, I might add, just for awareness, I'll be doing that meeting virtually.
The 27th?
Yeah.
Okay. And then the following week, we will have the formal hearing on Montana Dakota Utilities' 2023 natural gas rate case. That's case PU-23-341. That will start Monday, September 30th at 8:30 a.m. and continue also 8:30 each day, October 1st and October 2nd, however long it is necessary. That, I think, concludes the announcements. And we will take a recess and take some questions from the press and then reconvene for the administrative portion of the meeting. This meeting stands in recess.